Even people who do not think of themselves as artists in any way, shape, or form can be persuaded to act like artists when surrounded by a group of people committing art. And just that kind of group dynamic is expected this weekend as the festival called Art Inspires Ashland aims to live up to its name. One of the featured activities is a creation of a community gathering place, people coming together to create a place where people will continue to come together. That project will be guided by Milenko Matanovic. He's an accomplished artist himself, an immigrant from Slovenia, and the founder of the nonprofit Pomegranate Center based in Issaquah, Washington. Pomegranate is about seeking ways to get art, community, and creative thinking working together. Milenko, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
I'm glad to be here, Jeff.
You describe yourself as a recovering artist. I mean, how long did you work in art and what kind?
So when you grow up in a socialist country,
it was Yugoslavia back then.
Yugoslavia,
still, right?
Yeah. I developed kind of cognitive dissonance. The bottom line was that I felt that if I succeed by the expectations of our leaders and my parents, I would have failed myself to myself. So art became the only venue to in which I can pursue that kind of a cognitive dissonance. So I became a member of a group that now has actually received international attention as it was called Group OHO.
OHO, yeah.
H-O. Mm-hmm. And I just got a call, 2 weeks ago. There is a big festival in Europe, and they're featuring our work alongside with others as kind of foundational work in land art. So I was doing that in the late 60s. That's how old I am.
Okay.
Yeah. But just like that journey allowed me to step away and start being more true to myself, after a while, after exhibiting in various galleries and museums, I felt it was a very esoteric and disconnected venue to pursue. So I stopped doing art at the ripe age of 24. Mm-hmm. In order to learn what's going on in the world, started to travel, spent some time in an intentional community in Scotland, met my wife there, was interested in alternative technologies, environment. And so one thing led to another. From the perspective of someone growing up in a socialist country, the idea of participatory democracy is very compelling. So when I came to the United States, I was a little bit taken aback how poorly some communities were practicing that idea, mm-hmm. and how it was hijacked by the most negative thoughts that people had rather than the most positive possibilities.
Things like, let's stop doing this, let's get rid of that.
Every community meeting is filled with naysayers and grandstanders and curmudgeons. We collectively call them the horsemen of community apocalypse, because the fact is that a few people can derail a very constructive process. And so I became interested in this connection between art as making places. You know, fancy word now is placemaking. Mm-hmm. But it's really, in Slovenia, we didn't have placemaking because the cities still function. So placemaking is a corrective methodology to repair our cities that have been designed around cars rather than people.
Sort of like urban renewal, but without the big funding and the big bureaucracy.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the short story is that I ended up doing this nonprofit work that links together this idea of art making and community engagement. Can those two ideas coexist? And both are powerful on their own, but could they be more powerful when connected? So that's how I got to do what I do.
It sounds like the general thrust behind the festival that you're participating in this weekend, Art Inspires Ashland. Have you been part of this before?
Well, no, my connection with Ashland is fairly new. I gave a talk for a conference in Medford, and then they had people who run the center attended that talk and thought that maybe my ideas could be relevant to what's happening here in your town.
So when you go to a place, when you come into Ashland, and you've got a couple of sessions we should point out coming up. So there's a lecture beginning tonight at 6:30 at the Mies Auditorium. That's in the main arts building at the Southern Oregon University campus. And then a whole workshop, it looks like, coming up tomorrow about creative collaboration, also at the Mies Auditorium. When you come into a town, do you set the goals for the project for when it's over? Do they set the goals? I mean, how does that all come together?
So after 30 years of testing these ideas, we have a pretty firm methodology that is based on this. The community should be in charge of what needs to happen. We do not come up with an idea. But because of our work reputation, usually it's about physical space. But sometimes we are invited in communities where it ends up being something else because that was determined to be a greater priority. So in our methodology, we encourage people in the community to step up alongside with everyone else to really ask a question, what ought to happen for the future, which is different from asking a question, what do you think you would like, which generates just personal opinions and sometimes biases. But this much more creative and courageous question, what ought to happen for the future, is how we start. We collect ideas from the community, and then out of those ideas we start designing. And community members are invited to join the design session. So we differentiate between design thinking. Everyone can do that. I would love a bench. But design making is much more specialized, and you want people who are knowledgeable to do it. So in that relationship, in this dance between community and art, best things happen when artists tell the community what it needs, or when the community starts designing around their you know, recent visit to Venice or something like that.
All right, we'll talk about how the process unpacks when we come back and talk more with Milenko Matanovic. And he is the founder and executive director of the Pomegranate Center in Issaquah, Washington. We're talking about, well, he says placemaking is the term for it. We'll find out what looms for Ashland potentially and what he's done in some other communities in the past. We'll come back to the Jefferson Exchange and take your phone calls and emails if you'd like to join us. Back on the program in a minute 10. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today about art as a community building project of sorts. Milenko Matanovic has been working on this for many years now as the head of the Pomegranate Center in Issaquah, Washington. He is a trained artist himself, but he's involved in getting communities to work together on projects that often involve bringing the community together to create a place where the community can gather, if that makes any sense. So we'll talk more about him and with him, and you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about this process. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I want to clarify one thing that's just been pointed out by the folks who run Art Inspires Ashland. There is no specific project designed yet. You're really talking about using this weekend to help create one.
That's right. So usually our projects are when the project starts with community meeting and when it finishes with community build. So people work alongside with us in a barn-raising spirit. You see, now we perfected the model where it can be done in 3 to 4 months from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm.
But that requires collaboration of cities, regulators, people who have the power to derail that process. So a big chunk of our work is to actually meet with those people in advance to set up the conditions for success, to wire the project for success, because we know how precarious it can be later on if those people are not on board. But when the green light is there to proceed, we can do it very quickly, and that's part of our model. In a world where so many things take forever, in the Seattle area where I live, you know, it's famous for the Seattle process. We never get clear because more discussions need to happen. We think that that's part of the problem, that some of the joy of participation is driven out by that endless examination.
Oh, people feel like I went to a hearing and I said my piece, and then I had to go to 3 more hearings and say it again.
Yeah, and well, that's another discussion about hearings. We have serious concerns about hearings being the most productive way for communities to participate because it encourages people to only say their pro or con statements, but they are not around to hear how their position ricochets vis-a-vis somebody else's. Mm. And is there another learning, another possibility there that we need to examine? So when you think about the national scene now after this election, it's all about that polarization. To someone like me, a rather new arrival to America, I think the possibility of examining can we actually know more together? It's a very powerful idea, and it's at the very heart of participatory democracy. If you and I consult each other, maybe we'll uncover the bigger truth. Well, that has been driven out of our system. So we're using small projects to kind of go beyond words into action. And you know, in a recent project, do you know where Milton Freewater is?
In Eastern Oregon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we did a project last year. 250 people ended up working with us, and that's in a community.
It's a very small town, yeah.
It's a 7,000 people. Mm-hmm. And community that got a reputation for being reluctant to get involved in anything. So what we've learned over the years is some people like to talk, and that's fine, but that we have a tyranny of assuming that only meetings mean community engagement. So mm-hmm. only those who come to meetings are engaged and others are not. But what we've learned is that when it moves into actually doing it, building it, a whole new layer of society, of people, comes forward and say, I'm so glad we can do something. I'll bring my shovel. Let me know when I need it to be there. And it's amazing to see that. So that's the model that we've been exploring now. Is it possible to move beyond these ideological battles that we're involved in that never resolve anything, to focus on something that needs to be done, and then ask a question, what does your experience have to contribute to this, and what does my experience have to contribute to this? And then together we create something very quickly that has a legacy for the community. That's what I've been learning about and exploring.
It really gets to a physical level, though. I mean, you have something tangible you have created.
At the end, there's a gathering place, mm-hmm. you know. And so the philosophy of that is that the physical environment in which we live does influence our social behavior and either contributes to social wealth or not. And many American communities are designed now to contribute to the wealth of cars better than the wealth of drivers. Or people. You're lucky here in Ashland because you have a fabulous downtown area.
And walking spaces, yeah.
And walking spaces. But, you know, on the way here yesterday, driving with my wife, we stopped in a small community where pretty much everything was boarded off.
No thriving businesses, no downtown.
No downtown. And that's probably a big chunk of the United States right now. So how does one start transforming those places? Well, we think that the discussion will not lead it there. But imagine doing something around one corner in the center of town that says, here's our heart area, and we deposit something of meaning into that area. It needs to be for all generations, all people. Needs to be designed for quiet moments and civic celebrations at the same time. So that's the model that we've been using.
Malenko Matanovic, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the founder and executive director of the Pomegranate Center in Washington. He's in Ashland for the Art Inspires Ashland celebration this weekend. And we're talking about ways to get art, community, and creative thinking all pointed in one direction. So is there even a place in Ashland chosen to do something, or are you really at just the very, very beginning stages of conception?
The people who heard me speak got excited about the possibility about doing something like that not only is an artistic project, but it's a community building project. And so because we've learned how to combine those two streams, I think what will come out is simply some discussion. Today I will, in a talk, show the model, how it works, with lots of pictures from other mm-hmm. places so people can start imagining it. Tomorrow I will break it down. What does it take to take an idea of a gathering place from beginning to end? You know, financial realities, political realities, how to negotiate between different opinions in a community, how to get beyond endless discussion, how to control people who can derail the process easily. So that's all part of our learning, and that's what I'll be sharing tomorrow.
You've had to learn a lot about the way the political system operates and how regulations and zoning codes and all that stuff works, it sounds like.
Well, you know, we've learned how that in small communities like Ashland, it's more likely that a parks director can sit next to the arts director and some community members and start figuring things out. In a larger bureaucracy, that's much harder because the decision makers usually don't get involved in that kind of a setting. So when we create projects, we assemble what we call a convening group, not to confuse with the decision-making group, but they are just people that provide local knowledge to see how a project like that can succeed. And they provide guidance, but the community decides. And that's sometimes hard for leaders to accept.
I can well imagine. So you let's get an idea of what the specific things that have been created through this process in other communities have been. You mentioned Milton Freewater as another community in Oregon that did this. What was the creation there?
So the long story is we were asked by a local foundation to get involved with this small city of Milton Freewater because it was obviously a city in transition. Things were changing. All old economy fell apart. New economy was not in place yet. Milton Freewater is apparently the only hyphenated community in the United States. So the very name shows that there are two sectors to the community. So we worked with a planning group from Portland to get community members involved to identify priorities for the future. So that's a very important exercise in itself. That happened over three months with some 200 different people giving us ideas. Out of that came a document that identified something like 10 different goals for the future. You know, protecting hillsides, opening the river to people, creating festival spaces. But one of the goals was to strengthen the hyphen district, this area in between two
towns. It was Milton and Freewater, and the hyphen is...
But there was nothing in the hyphen area, so we created a project to strengthen that idea. Started to work on that a week after the plan was developed, and then build it 3 months later. So in that instance, was an empty lot in front of a high school, where Dairy Queen used to be. So it had memories of a gathering place, but no function. It was just a gravel. And so we transformed that into a gathering place that has a small stage. We used rock because Milton Freewater has tons of rock in its soil and something called gabion walls, which are metal cages with rocks filled in. Those cages were assembled by welders from the community because in farmer communities, lots of people know how to weld in order to repair their farming equipment. So in this kind of a project, you build on the strengths of the community, whether those are materials or talents. And then we design it in such a way that it acknowledges those strengths. So at the end, we created this project, the value of which is probably $250,000 if it would be done through traditional channels. Mm-hmm. But we did it
with contractors and all that stuff that way.
We did it on a budget of something like $70,000 or $80,000. Uh-huh. You know, so it's tiny investment with huge results. So the material budget was something like $25,000. The rest was process and community engagement and our fees and so on. But that's what we've been learning about is that, and we are not saying other big parks should not be built. We're just saying maybe this kind of a thinking should be part of the menu, how we transform communities now, that should be considered seriously. And that there is a thirst in people to put their hands, not just their ideas, to put their hands into the life of their communities. And that's what we turn basically people into fabricators and artists and help us do banners and mosaic and carve concrete and turn concrete pavement into an artwork, whatever happens. And we figured out how to do it with amateurs. So people do not have to have a lot of experience to work alongside with us.
All right. So all the people who say, I'm sorry, I can't even figure out which end of the paintbrush to hold, that's fine.
Well, and it's a very interesting moment. In every product, there is someone who says, don't get me involved because I'm not an artist. And I think we've been trained in our minds that talk, self-talk, and you eventually need to say, do you see this brush? Can you pick it up? And they do. Can you put this brush into this bucket of paint? Okay. Now, paint. And it's so amazing because the hand knows what to do while their minds are still arguing that they are not artists. And, you know, pick up this rock and put it in a wall that we're building. And they know, because I think art on that level is an ancient memory that is part of our cellular experience. And it's just modern art now that we think about this isolated activity that is apart from life. And it's only practiced by a few very talented people while the rest of us mediocre yokels, you know, cannot do anything. We try to reverse that, and we find that there is a deep memory of that experience in our genes that can surface very quickly. And so it's not unusual that somebody says, I'm a perfectionist. I do not tolerate what my neighbor Mary is doing here. It's not good enough. And we unleash them and say, do it better. And she says, okay, we need to do this right. You know, how great is that? So here's a person, never been an artist, but knows what it means to do something right.
Interesting. So you get all kinds of skills out there. We're talking about combining art, community, and creative thinking with Milenko Matanovic, who is the founder and executive director of the Pomegranate Center in Issaquah, Washington. He has come to Ashland as part of the Art Inspires Ashland Festival this weekend, talking about ways in which members of a community can work together, often to create gathering spaces, getting the community together to create a place where the community can get together. 800-838-3760 if you'd like to join the conversation by phone. Your emails are welcome, too, at jx@jeffnet.org. Getting people to work together, I've noticed you say it takes courage to collaborate.
It does.
Just to get out of our own zones and try to help listen to other people?
So think about it. To collaborate means that I need to be open to an idea not of my own making. Right? So implied in collaboration is this willingness to know that I know something, but I do not know everything. And so the language, the way we talk to each other, if we say the way I see it, that allows you, Jeff, to say, and the way I see it is this. And that's how collaboration starts. I believe that community starts on the very foundation of the community, I should say, is the moment where somebody is generous enough to recognize great ideas from others.
Oh.
Because think about it. In our community meetings, we come there with fixed ideas, and we argue longer and louder for the righteousness of my idea.
And we often come ready for an argument because there is something that has annoyed us to get us to that meeting.
That's right. And that's part of the, in my view, that's part of the tragedy of our times, is that we have given up on the idea that this can still work. So we come to meetings, whether they are national debates or small town meetings. We come with our swords drawn, our pistols cocked, our shouting ready to go, to yell these fixed positions. What we are trying to promote in the idea of community engagement is this courage to say, do you accept that you know something, but you're blissfully ignorant about something else? So, you know, you had a football coach here earlier. I heard something. Did you?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know anything about football coaching. Mm-hmm. So I would be stupid if I say I don't have anything to learn from that person, right?
Right.
But magnify that by a factor of 1,000. And right now we are living in a world so complex, so many things need to be sorted out, that anyone who still wants to solve that system, large system, with the expertise of a singular expertise, singular knowledge, mm-hmm. is fooling themselves. So we need each other, and therefore collaboration needs to become the norm in the future. So our projects are just small exercises to drive us in that. That's the long game, right? Mm-hmm. The long game is collaboration
on a broader scale.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But these are kind of exercises. They are practicing scales on a piano for the community.
It's getting us a start as something. Now, and I noticed from watching your TEDx Tacoma presentation that you want people to bring their skills and talents to these community collaborations, but do you find that they often focus too specifically on their own skills?
Well, it's a precarious tension to negotiate, and that's part of what we at Pomegranate Center have been learning about. So on one hand, you want to have participation. On the other hand, you want to have excellence. So that's one tension. How do you manage excellence and participation? You know, so imagine a community feast and you're making pizza and somebody brings turnip. Somebody needs to say, maybe turnip is not the best ingredient. You know, so you still need to honor that. But I think bringing people to a point where they can recognize that something bigger is at stake. It's not just a collection of ideas jammed together, that there is a bigger idea that wants to be born. So that means that they need to both be strong in their expertise, but also willing to learn from others.
That's always a trick. Okay, yeah. We'll learn more about how you get some of those barriers removed from the creative and collaborative process. Milenka Matanovic, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange from the Pomegranate Center in Issaquah, Washington. We're talking about building things in a community as a community. We'll come back to the Jefferson Exchange and take phone calls and emails from you in a minute 10. It's the final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking about building things as a community, the collaboration of art, community, and creative thinking, which is what the Pomegranate Center in Issaquah, Washington is all about. It is founded and run by Milenka Matanovic, who describes himself as a recovering artist. He comes to communities and helps bring community members together to create spaces where they can gather. That's often the approach. He is in Ashland for the Art Inspires Ashland Festival this weekend. He has a lecture tonight at 6:30 at the Mies Auditorium on the SOU campus and a whole day workshop tomorrow at the same place. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. One of the best examples I noticed from, and there are many videos of Milenka online you can go find at YouTube from TEDx presentations and the like. San Diego, a good example, place atop a canyon that was kind of scrubby looking and mm-hmm. homeless people had been camping there and there had been drug deals made there and mm-hmm. I guess drug paraphernalia left behind and it turned into a little community meeting place. How long a process was there from the time that somebody identified this is the place we'd like to do something until the new space was built?
In that particular instance, we had a funder who and with the funding, we basically partnered with local nonprofit organization called Arts, A Reason to Survive. And then we trained people and then put out an RFP, a request for proposals from different neighborhoods to do a project. So are you willing to work with us on this model, try to test it? And one of those came from this Manzanita Park in San Diego, which we loved because think about it, every community has those spaces, hundreds of spaces that are neglected and are in public property. So in this particular project, what people brought to us is here's this little space, maybe 70 by 30 feet. That's it.
It's not very big at all, no.
Yeah, but it was a spot from which sunset could be watched, and it was robbed of that possibility for the neighborhood because it was occupied by negative activities only. It was actually barbed wired to prevent people from entering. Hmm. And they said, we have kids who could walk through this to their school. We would love to come and bring a glass of wine and watch the sunset. Help us do that. So that's how that came about. And that was the end of the road, so that came to the edge of the canyon, and it was public property. So we didn't need to purchase the land. And every city has hundreds of such places on the riverbeds, where our grid system encounters obstacles. Often there is this little spot. We were lucky that in this particular case was kind of in the heart of a community, so people could walk to that spot, and it became an extension of their lives, and it's used very beautifully.
I was going to ask you how much these places get used after you leave the community.
So one of the testament of how successful this can be is that I got an email from the convening group that we assembled, that somebody put little tag on one of the columns.
They spray painted some, yeah.
And apparently, I was back in the Seattle area at the time, but apparently in 5 minutes, four of those convening group members came with alcohol, cleaned it up, and said, not in my park. And it has stayed pretty much vandalism free. And we find that repeatedly. So in Walla Walla, we did a project where not gang members, but family members connected to gang members worked with us, and project stayed clean forever because there was something, some life connection.
A sense of ownership to it.
A sense of ownership. And that's part of our model. At the end, lots of people should say, I did this.
So there's more value in rather than having a contractor come in and build this structure that the city paid for.
The buzzword I use for this is multiple victory. So you try to do it in a way that many goals are met through a single project. So for us, two major goals are at the end should be a nice park, but also there should be a sense of increased social capital, you know, better connection between people. And what we find, that there was actually a study done in San Diego about one of that very project that you mentioned, and they tracked the connections that were made through the making of this project, and people, you know, became friends with each other. They got connected in thousands of different ways. Organizations got connected. So it was an excuse to building connections. And people in the neighborhood said that after the project was built, 70% of people said, we feel safer. Now imagine how much money we could spend in increasing safety in our communities. It would be endless discussions and endless funding.
Oh, sure. More police, more cars, all that stuff.
But this was kind of an unexpected side result of this work, is that people felt safer as a result of doing this together. And the most important finding was that 98% of people who worked on the project said, I want to do it again.
Really?
Yeah.
98%?
Mm-hmm.
That's an amazing number. Milenko Matanovic, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. You can join us at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Here is Rita in Eugene. Welcome to the Exchange. Rita, you there?
Oh, hi. Thank you. Yes, I am here, and I literally am in my car and pulled over and stopped and just let go of any errands I was about so that I could continue listening to this wonderful conversation. And let Milenko know that I so appreciate your moving, your creative vision, your sense of possibilities from out of a small studio, isolated space situation, and out into the world. This is so inspiring, and I applaud and cheer folks in Medford who might have originally brought you into the Rogue Valley, what you're about to do in Ashland, and sitting here in a parking lot in Eugene, I hope that that we're able to host you as well. So I'm just feeling full up to the brim and spilling over with optimism and appreciation for what you're doing and the lovely response that you actually have statistical success data for. So thank you very much,
Rita. Thank you for the call, very much appreciated, and especially for pulling over.
Yes, thank you, Rita.
So have you done any projects in Southern Oregon from Eugene on south, for example?
No. Over the past few years, we focused in our work in Washington State, in the Seattle area, Walla Walla Valley, including Milton Free Water, and then down south of San Diego in National City. Mm-hmm. And so in this model, we partner with local nonprofits. Usually there is another partner, is a foundation. Sometimes it's family foundations that want to see the possibilities in our method and are aware of situations in their field of work where the connecting our method with the conditions of those communities can looks productive. But I am talking with a couple of foundations here in Oregon to see if, if doing something similar can happen in Oregon and train people and use projects as a hands-on component of that training. So at the end, it's not just a project, but it's people who kind of develop muscle memory, not mm-hmm. just ideas, but muscle memory, how this feels, this societal collaboration.
So it can go on once you've left.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So we're, you know, I'm old enough now. I'd betray that I was an artist in the late 60s, so people can do their math. But I'm at a point where actually others are beginning to run next year the organization on a day-to-day basis, and I'll focus all of my efforts in training and giving talks and possibly do some writing about this, because I'm interested in grafting this amazing learning opportunity into other systems if they're so inclined.
You and I were talking actually during the last break about how this sort of integrates with the political system, and I was observing that people don't get involved in their communities often and start attending council meetings and things like that until they're angry about something.
Right.
So given that general approach to, like, when I engage with my community on a larger scale, it's usually because I got a bone to pick with them.
Right.
How do you change the dynamic, particularly in the opening hours of a workshop like the one tomorrow, to get people to think, okay, what do you want? Don't tell me what you dislike. Tell me what you want.
Right.
How hard is it to make that turn?
Actually, it's not very hard, but there are a few tools that we use for that. We ask people to engage with us in the spirit of a pilot project. In other words, let's try something different. And I'm overt about that, and the tool we use is that we create a kind of a code of behavior that we ask everybody to try for the duration of this project. And on the surface, that code of behavior seems innocent, but it's actually came about because we've seen how fragile those processes can be, and we anticipate a behavior that can relay the process. So we ask people to, for example, be willing to listen to each other, that everybody will speak. We ask people to be willing to change their mind in view of new information. We ask them to look forward rather than back. You know, the code word is we know what you oppose, but we would love to hear what you propose instead. It's easy to say no. That's such a knee-jerk reaction. I don't like this. But it's a little bit harder and more courageous work to say, and instead I propose this, mm-hmm. right? So we try to create that and create an atmosphere where people are encouraged to step up to be at their best. And then we organize meetings in such a way that everyone speaks. So I ran meetings with 150 people in 2 hours, and everybody had a chance to speak.
Wow. 150 people in 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's a feat that most county commissioners can't claim.
No, but the question needs to be right. And that code of behavior that people do not grandstand, they do not get on their particular soapboxes, needs to be implemented, and somebody needs to manage that. And I've learned a lot about how to run the meetings in a way that everybody has a chance to speak. On rare occasions, somebody gets really mad at me.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are accustomed to their platform. You know, I'm an important person, and uh-huh. you may only get one sentence, but I get one paragraph, or I get a novel to recite here. So when that happens, somebody needs to say, wait a minute, we would love to hear from everyone else, and if you go on forever, we cannot. So what is your closing statement? You know, it's that mm-hmm. kind of a thing. And that's hard to do.
How big an effort do you make to bring in people who may not be represented in the room at that time? I ask because I was looking at the work you did in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. And
right.
You got people of different colors working together, and I'm just curious about the efforts you make to make sure that as many portions of the community are represented in the process from the beginning.
So again, let's step back for a moment, and the sad reality is, you alluded to this, that in every community there is my experience in small communities, there are about 40, 50 people who go to council meetings and are on boards and commissions, and the rest of the people only show up to complain against something. That's not a good algorithm for democracy, right? So you remember when I talked about the convening group? So
the interface with the real decision
well,
makers.
Well, we need to invite right at the beginning people with different points of view. Otherwise, it can very quickly be an a single issue group that takes over this thing, you know, and we have tons of nonprofits, you know, I'm only interested in this and only interested in that, and they can hijack that. We are not saying those goals are not important, but we are saying perhaps more important question is how do those goals now dance with other equally important goals that other people hold? Now, that's where engagement begins. Otherwise, it's just activism. So in my jargon, I talk about the difference between community recruitment and community engagement. In the recruitment, I adopt a personality of I already know what I'm doing, and I'm just telling you and try to convince you. In engagement, as we talked before, I need to state my strengths, my insights, in such a way that allow your insights to come to the table also. So I engage with you. I know something. I see this. What do you see? Right? That is so simple. And yet I find the most foundational work right now, in our world, that unless we learn how to collaborate, we may be in deep doo-doo for a long, long time.
This is quite an abstract version of art you're doing now. You realize that you're pulling people together and sort of weaving a new tapestry.
That's what I've tried to do in a small domain of my authority.
Well, we will see what emerges from the efforts that begin this weekend in Ashland with Art Inspires Ashland. Milenka Matanovic will be speaking tonight at 6:30 at the Arts Building. That's the Mies Auditorium. And then the workshop is tomorrow from 9 to 4:30 about maximizing community ownership. Milenka Matanovic, thanks for joining us on The Exchange.
Thank you, Jeff.